A jam-packed show this week, celebrating the best in print. Our editors talk us through Monocle's latest newspaper about Milan and Italian culture through the prism of Salone del Mobile, the twists and turns of a new true crime title on newsstands, and in the spirit of springtime here in the Northern Hemisphere, or at the very least in the hope of some sunshine this weekend, we interview the editor-in-chief of Solar. Bask in the glow this week on The Stack. From Midori House in London, this is The Stack, 30 minutes of print industry analysis with me, Tom Edwards. From the state of the Australian magazine industry to interviews with the editors of an exciting title from Spain and a new publication dedicated to true crime, it's all here on this week's programme. But we start the show previewing a new Monocle publication, the Salone Weekly Edition 1, obviously, which is out now, right in time for the start of Salone del Mobile in Milan. Salone, of course, the largest trade fair of its kind. And I welcome to the studio Monocle's design editor, Nolan Giles, to tell us what to expect in Milan this year and more about Monocle's latest, Nolan, I'm going to say, sumptuous print project?
Sumptuous is a very good word to describe it.
Now, we've just grabbed you before you head off to Salone, of course, but tell us a bit about the genesis of this paper, because you've been even busier than you normally are.
I've been a busy boy putting this together, because it's quite chunky looking at it in front of us today, but very happy to have it here in the studio and have it in Midori House. It's out on newsstands right now, and it'll be available in Milan across the week. So basically, the idea came to us just because of the fact that the summer and the winter weekly newspapers that we've already launched with Monocle had been so successful. And the format just seemed to work so well for Salone del Mobile, for the fact that because, first of all, we can unpack an event via Monocle's take on it. We can also look at the city, and then we can also look at the industry. So we have kind of three topics that we work through throughout this newspaper, which gives us a lot to go through. We're not providing a guide to the event. This isn't every single event that you can go to, every single exhibitor. It's our selection of what we think is the most vital parts of Milan Design Week, and a bit of a explanation and a bit of a feel for the city through some journalism.
And you say journalism, I mean, what journalism, what treats there are? Just breaking straight into the first section, we'll talk a bit about the structure of the paper in a second. There's a good old sit down with Richard Rogers. People may have heard of him. A lovely portrait, but it goes right through, doesn't it? That first bit is kind of a bit newsier. We've got architecture and design is a sort of big second section. What is that? A sort of a mustard yellow. And then in sky blue, food, drink and travel. So it is, it's a holistic approach, certainly, to your visit to Milan, if you're headed there in the next few days, as, of course, you are yourself.
Exactly. I mean, if you're going to Milan, of course, you're going to be overwhelmed by how much there is to see there in terms of design, but you might not know the best bars to dip into, you might not know the best restaurants to have a bite or a meeting at, and you might not know where to escape to after the craziness of the week's over. So that's why we can see on this whopping big cover of the food, drink and travel section, a nice picture of one of the lakes. We do a tour of the lake district above Milan, looking at Lake Como and other places and where you should go, what you
can
should
you,
do.
Can you share the big headline of that with us? No, you've got to tell everyone what
it's
it is.
Great. I didn't come up with this one, but it's a good one. I think Josh Fenner is responsible for it. Better lake than never.
Better lake than never. Everyone, keep up at the back. We should say, because obviously we're often interested in the kind of commercial realities and the commercial imperatives of publishing, particularly newsprint, which we know is expensive. And it's funny, you know, we were just talking before the show started, weren't we, Nolan, about, I mean, have you ever seen advertising for furniture companies look as handsome as it does in this huge format, isn't it? It's a joy. The ads are they're almost as beautiful as our Monocle content.
Exactly. I mean, you're looking at the USM advertisement there, which is a Swiss furniture company. And it's just absolutely incredible, you know, the size and the scale of that. That's a poster you could put on your wall, and they've just used one super strong image showcasing their products in a really beautiful setting. The brand's there, but, you know, it's the eye-catching image that's going to make you appreciate and want that product. And that's why, you know, we've done so well with this as an advertising exercise, just because of the fact that the brands want to see their glorious products in the full newspaper scale.
Well, and there's something, I never mean this term pejoratively, there's something sort of old school about great print ads in newsprint. I love the idea of thinking of all the sort of design denizens in Milan sort of walking around, looking very elegant, as you will, Nolan. But with the monocle, Salone Weekly Edition tucked under their arm, perhaps I can see it happening. It's going to be the way, right?
Exactly. And we've actually got a little treat for you as well, Tom, because we delve into the world of Italian advertising from the 60s, 70s, and 80s. I'm trying to find it here. There's just so much content.
Listeners can hear. It's the last spread in the culture.
We've got it
culture
here.
Segment.
So
these are a joy to behold, aren't they?
Absolutely beautiful. It's, you know, the glory days of print advertising. Some of these were in magazines. Some of these were big display posters. But it kind of shows you what you were just talking about then, the value of really seeing just good, smart advertising and art direction in print on a large scale. It's a really fantastic way to showcase things.
Now, Nolan, you're not just there for a jolly, and you're not just selling newspapers or delivering them. I could see you on your bike riding around.
I'm definitely going to be delivering quite a lot. I think I've got 150 in my backpack to get through.
What's kind of top of your list? Obviously, you have so many friends and partners of Monocle that you'll be wanting to say hello to in Milan all during the week. But what's top of your list and what are you expecting? I guess more from a kind of Salone dynamic. What's the big themes going to be this time around?
Well, the fair obviously is always important to just see where things are going with the design industry, what new furniture is available, what the trends are. I think a big trend at this fair will just be actually the downsizing of products because so many of us are kind of moving into more enclosed urban environments. Our apartments are getting smaller, but we still want beautiful things in there and functional things. So we're going to see a lot more of that. And then I think it's just kind of escaping into the city itself and seeing some of the larger scale attractions. So for example, COS, the fashion company, are working with a gentleman called Philip K. Smith III to do an incredible display based in a courtyard of an amazing villa, which will use mirrors to kind of create this otherworldly environment for you to walk around. So there's always these amazing large scale things going on, and then, you know, you might duck down an alleyway and find something small that you'd never thought you would discover there. So there's plenty to see.
And just finally, there's a Raise the Bar, see what they've done there, featuring the food, drink and travel section, a picture of Bar Basso, the place to end your day at Salone, apparently, Nolan, and deals are done over a Negroni or 10. You'll be holding up your side of the bargain, right, with a Negroni or half dozen?
100% be holding up my end of the bargain with a Negroni or even just a beer at Bar Basso. This is an absolutely fantastic bar that's very famous within the design community. We've told a beautiful story about this bar. Chiara Romella, who will be joining me on the trip, will also be there, and she wrote this fantastic piece. So read the story and come meet us at Bar Basso.
You'll find Nolan nursing a Negroni or two, usually before 9 a.m. Nolan, is that right?
10, maybe 10 this time.
Sometimes he waits as late as 10 a.m. That's Nolan Giles, Monocle's design editor. Find him at Salone and find the Monocle Salone Weekly on all discerning newsstands right now, or you can find more details at the website. To Spain now. Since its launch in 2016, Solar has built a reputation as one of the country's best lifestyle glossies. Aimed at the vast Spanish-speaking world, that's a cool nearly half a billion people, don't forget, Solar is a suitably bombastic mix of fashion, culture and travel. Fernando Augusto Pacheco spoke to Solar's editor-in-chief, Igor Ramirez García Peralta.
First of all, Igor, tell us the beginnings of the magazine. It's all started in 2016, right?
We came out in 2016, but the idea came to my mind the first time in October 2014. So it took about 14, 15 months from the idea until the first issue hit the newsstands.
And I love the description that you have on your website in the magazine itself. You know, it's a magazine aimed basically to the Spanish-speaking world, you know, which is about half a billion people. So it's not a publication that you just wanted to keep in Spain, right?
No. Actually, I mean, our demographics have changed a little bit. It always happens once the actual product is out and you see how people react to it. Obviously, for us, Latin America and the States are very important. Latin America, from the point of view of distribution, is a challenge, the same way that it's also a challenge also for international fashion brands because of taxes, in our case, also because of import, export, etc. But Latin America is very important for us, and the U.S. as well. As you know, Spanish, if things don't change radically in the next 3 years, Spanish is supposed to become the most spoken language in the States by 2050. No. So we thought that it was surprising that we don't have, with Spanish being spoken in over 20 countries in the world, we don't have a Spanish BBC. We don't have a huge media outlet that talks to all Spanish speakers worldwide. And I think that's a shame. That's embarrassing.
Well, it is, but you're doing things to fix that. And what I like about Solar as well, it is glossy, colorful. It just looks beautiful as well. Tell us a bit more about the design. Who do you work with?
We were very lucky because I work with Alex Vidarin, who is a fantastic creative director. He was a creative director from another magazine, for instance, since its launch. And he was there, I think, for 8-9 years. I mean, he was the first one that I spoke to, like, hey, I want to do a magazine. How do I do it? You know, and he told me, well, let's do it together. I'll design it for you. And he is also creative director now of Town & Country. He was creative director until recently of Esquire as well. I mean, he has worked with a lot of big titles. And obviously having him on board, believing in the project also, has been huge for us. Because it's for a young magazine, it's very hard to afford a creative director like that. You know, luckily, he was somebody that believed in the project and he was on board since minute one. We also have the English version at the end of the magazine, so it's available for everybody.
Oh, and also I have to say, you know, the magazine is doing very well. I think the issue 5 has just been published, correct?
Yeah, issue 5 just came out in Spain last week, and in Europe it should be coming out these days as we speak, and in the States in about 2-3 weeks more.
How often does it come out? I mean, and besides that, I was wondering, from your readers, is it mainly subscription or is still quite a lot of newsstand sales?
Well, it's a lot of newsstand sales and online. We are through Boutique Max. You can purchase the magazine online. And the magazine comes out twice a year in February, March, and September, October, obviously, according to the fashion calendar. And we also do a lot of online content. No? We're really beefing up our online presence, both on our platform and on social media. Doing specific content for that, my business partner, Miquel Alos Amantes, has been really pushing that with fashion stories exclusively shot for online. We're also doing a lot of video content, which is fun. So, yeah, it's growing. I mean, I have to say that what has been our strength has been precisely that there isn't another product exactly like ours in the market. No? And it's very important to say that there are fantastic magazines coming out of Spain. Fantastic. I have really inspiring colleagues. But most of them are either in English or they are licenses from international publications, or they have a very small distribution. So in that regard, I think, as far as I know, we are the only ones that are doing it in Spanish with a global dimension, not only in Spanish, but born in Spanish and independently.
Amazing. Igor, I just would like to, if you could tell us, what can you preview from issue 5 for those who doesn't have an issue in their hands at the moment?
Well, issue 5 is dedicated to sex. Perfect. Each issue has a theme, even though it's not a completely thematic magazine, although this one is pretty round on it. And it's sex from different perspectives. No? We have 3 different covers. One is with Calo Rivero, an Argentinian actress who has been one of the front runners in Latin America with all the Me Too movement. And then on the other side, we have Amanda Lear in a limited edition cover shot by Daniel Riera. And she is the other side of the coin. No? She stands on with a French woman saying, like, sex is sex. I like it when a man tells me that I have a nice ass. The third cover, which is the explicit cover, is an image by Luis Venegas, a great colleague of mine here in Spain, the editor-in-chief of Candy. It's a photograph that he shot of his boyfriend, Leo, and their dog, Perry. That's really an image that is everything about Solar. No? It's during the summer, they're taking a nap, a siesta. And so we have those 3 visions of sex, the current political situation around it, the importance of still seduction and play between men, women, whatever, and also the part of love. And also we address the whole topic of sex from all different perspectives, and also seeing it as a force of nature and as creation, empowerment, playfulness.
Well, I think that's a fantastic theme, Igor. And may I ask, as a bit of a fan of Amanda Lear as well, have you done the interview yourself with her?
Yes.
How was the meeting? I mean, I'm fascinated by her.
It was fun. It took me about 6 months to get it. And then afterwards, we immediately clicked. And now we communicate almost on a daily basis. But it was fun. I wanted to send a fantastic journalist that sometimes writes for us. She has a weekly column in El País, no, in our biggest newspaper here in Spain. And Amanda tells me, like, ugh, I would prefer a man. I shall be more comfortable with a man. I shall, written like that. And I was like, okay, then I'm going to do it myself. And same thing for the shoot. She didn't want a single woman on the shoot. She likes to be, obviously, the center of attention, which she rightfully deserves. I always think that she's a link to a world that doesn't exist anymore, that was probably more fun and definitely more creative than our current times. It was definitely a fantastic experience. That's one of the things that I like the most probably about my job, the great people that I get to meet and interview.
That was Igor Ramirez Garcia Peralta, and the latest edition of Salar is out now. Here at The Stack, we like to look at the state of the publishing industry around the world. From time to time, we alight in a particular market or another for a closer look, and today, we're off to Australia. Big publishers have been struggling there, but the market for independent titles in the country is positively booming, with magazines like Frankie on the rise and rise. Monocle's R.T. Bettigheri gives us this rundown.
Like most markets across the globe, Australia's publishing industry has been struggling. Its major publishing houses have seen revenues in freefall. 10 years ago, the magazine industry was attracting around $1 billion in ad sales, but nowadays it's about a third of that. Many marquee and legacy magazines have closed their print editions, such as Bauer Media's Dolly magazine, the teenage girl's Bible for almost 50 years, and the iconic Clio magazine, also from the Bauer stable, a homegrown answer to Cosmopolitan that was launched in 1972. They're some of the most prominent recent magazine closures, but there are many others that have quietly folded or been sold off over the past few years, such as specialist camping, caravan and motorcycle magazines, and lifestyle titles like the Australian edition of Prevention. Even Rugby League Week magazine wasn't immune from the effects of the industry downturn. The competition posed by online content, which is fresher and timelier, means that monthly or bi-monthly magazines are simply not viable anymore. But there is one category that's sort of flourishing: independent magazines. I'll get to that in a minute, but first, let's set the scene. Australian publishing is dominated by a few big players. There's Pacific Magazines, or Pac Mags as it's known, which has a stable of 13 weekly and monthly magazines. This includes the local editions of Marie Claire, Women's Health, Men's Health and InStyle. It also owns the local version of People magazine, called Who. Another publisher, Universal Magazines, has a stable of about 18 titles, mostly craft and lifestyle. The behemoth is Bauer Media. That's the same Bauer Media that's headquartered in Hamburg. It bought Australia's largest and glossiest publisher, ACP, in 2012. Bauer publishes a few dozen magazines and digital titles, including the Australian Elle and the country's highest circulating magazine, Australian Women's Weekly. But it too is floundering, dealing with falling circulations and revenues. Bauer has also struggled to understand the intricacies and the nuances of the Australian magazine market. And to add to its woes, in September, a court ordered Bauer to pay Hollywood actor Rebel Wilson $4.5 million Australian dollars after publishing articles painting her as a serial liar. It's Australia's highest ever defamation payout, and industry watchers are waiting to see how Bauer will tackle coming up with the money to pay it. All this considered, there's no denying the Australian magazine industry is in a kind of crisis. But in every crisis, there's opportunity. And that opportunity is something that independent magazines are capitalising on. Higher quality paper stock, niche interest titles, interesting typefaces and layouts. These are all features of a newer breed of publication that's increasingly finding favour amongst readers. Frankie is one of the stalwarts of this end of the industry. It's a women's magazine aimed squarely at those more interested in craft, feminism and ideas that aren't 20 ways to please your lover. A more recent entry is Lunch Lady, a book-shaped magazine with high design credentials, full of recipes and parenting tips for the kind of parents who like to grow their own greens. It grew out of a blog and is now onto its fifth issue. There's Collective, a lifestyle magazine aimed at professional women, Creative Bridal Publications White and Hello May, and Sprout, a niche food title focusing on produce. And there's even somewhat of a unicorn, a fledgling Australian-published foreign affairs magazine. Australian Foreign Affairs, which will come out three times a year. It's an ambitious project for such a querulous time for publishing, but maybe it's just the shake-up the industry needs.
And finally, on this week's busy programme, we speak to the editors of a title dedicated to true crime. Although there are plenty of podcasts, books and films on the topic, many felt a really good magazine devoted to crime was missing from newsstands. But worry no more. Founded by Emma Hardy and Grace Harrison, Foul Play is an interesting mix of crime-focused stories. Whether you're interested in a man who decorated envelopes that inmates sent to their loved ones, to an analysis of an intriguing murder case in a sleepy Stockholm suburb. Monocle's Fernando Augusto Pacheco spoke to Emma and Grace here in the studio.
Emma Hardy and Grace Harrison, thank you so much to come here on The Stack to talk about your very good magazine, Foul Play, about a topic that, to be honest, I haven't seen many magazines about crime around. But Grace, tell us a bit about the story when you guys came up with the idea.
I mean, there are a couple of true crime magazines that already exist, but when me and Emma met, so we used to work at a literary magazine, and we kind of met and realised that we shared a love of true crime, but specifically a certain type of true crime. So a type of true crime that was like non-sensational and kind of well-produced. And basically, we worked at a magazine where we used to get free books into the office all of the time. And then we found ourselves always going for the same books. Emma used to work 2 days a week there. So then we kind of became friends over that. And then we all of a sudden realised that there was no magazine doing what we were trying to do, which we couldn't really believe, considering there's been such an amazing wave of, you know, really well-produced and brilliant like true crime literature, books, podcasts. So we basically just decided to make something that we would want to read. And yeah, that's kind of how it was born.
And Emma, what's the approach? Because of course, I know you guys are trying to avoid to be too sensationalist. And so which kind of stories, I mean, do you like to have on the Foul Play?
We like to do a mixture of kind of the standard stories that you hear a lot about are like serial killers. If we do a coverage about something like serial killers, we try and take it from a new angle. So recently in the last magazine, we had someone who had a family member. They were killed by Harold Shipman, or at least on the murder list, I think, of like potential victims. And we kind of wanted her to tell her side of the story and her experience of it, rather than just having the kind of sensationalist, oh my God, look at all these terrible things that someone did, kind of taking things from a new angle. We also try and keep things a bit more lighthearted. So we've got our Foul Playlist, which is music and songs that you might not be aware that have a story of a true crime tilt behind them. In the next issue, we've got some stuff about botanical thefts. So we try and take stories that people might not be aware of. And if we are covering kind of well-trodden stories, we try and take a new angle.
I'm curious to read about the botanical theft. Well, but you know, Emma mentioned this thing about the lightheartedness a little bit. So there's a story that I really love in the magazine, which is a guy who was actually in prison, but he was also an artist, and he used to decorate the envelopes of prisoners who wants to send for their loved ones. What a fantastic story. How did you find out about this guy?
So this has been a really interesting thing as well when we started making the magazine, is that we found that we had so many kind of personal links with people that have been affected by crime in different ways. So Matt, who did the photo story for us, he's actually my old boss's husband. And they met, they've got this amazing story, but they met when he was in prison. But the story that he's done for us is about the envelopes that he used to decorate for other prisoners. So kind of taking a different angle on, you know, that there's a person involved in both, in any kind of crime story. But we also just wanted to do something with that where it kind of looked nice and was interesting and took a new angle. But it was someone we knew, and we've kind of found from doing it, every time we speak to someone new, everyone's got a new kind of story for us. Or they, oh, this thing happened to me, or actually... And that's kind of where a lot of the stories from issue one came from. And again, it's still happening from issue two. There are so many people that have just really interesting stories. And I feel like that's the kind of thing that wouldn't normally be covered in another kind of true crime magazine.
And Emma, talking about issue two already, I mean, I would like to know a little bit more, you know, the business plan, you know, for the magazine. I know you guys, you know, the first issue, of course, is always like a bit of a mystery. But you know, if there's already an issue two in plans, I mean, tell me more. So how would you like to sell the magazine? More through subscriptions or, you know, or you have a website where you sell then? Tell me more
so
about the site.
We've got issue two coming out right at the end of April, and we primarily sell online, although we are now stocked in Mag Culture, East London, and we are really open to more kind of retail distribution. For the next issue, we're upping our print run. Issue one did really well, so we're really pleased about that, and it's allowed, those sales have allowed us to put more into the magazine for the next issue. So our website is foulplaymag.com, and on there you can read some blog posts. So we've taken a bit of the content from issue one as well, and you can buy issue one. We've actually sold out of issue one, but we are doing another print run, so you can pre-order issue two.
That's amazing news, huh? Grace, the fact that you have to do another print run.
We've had to do two or three.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's been amazing. We've had lots of interest from the States, which has been great. We've kind of had lots of interest from like the true crime community, and I mean, there's obviously people that like buying magazines, but also a lot of people that love true crime. There's also quite a lot where it intersects, and there are quite a lot of people that love both. Yeah, the reception's been amazing and overwhelmingly kind of positive, I think. So that's been really exciting. So we're upping it for issue two. Yeah, and then hopefully we'll be able to start doing subscriptions and things like that. But quarterly, we're planning on publishing.
And I want to know more, you know, about your life. When did you become so interested in true crime, for example, Emma? Do you remember? Is it something recent? Or
I've always been kind of fascinated in it, but it's developed in the last kind of few years. A few years ago, I started doing a book history master's degree. And as part of that, one of my essay topics that I chose was about how the newspapers responded to the Jack the Ripper murders. And that was really interesting. So it was kind of almost the Jack the Ripper murders kind of created the tabloids as we know them today. So it was kind of my first entry into looking at events that have happened in the past around true crime that we're all aware of, but taking them and looking at them from a slightly different angle rather than the kind of gory stories that you hear about the Ripper murders. And yeah, it's just kind of led on from there. And when Serial podcast came out, I got really hooked on that and then went around looking at all the other podcasts that emerged afterwards.
What about you, Grace?
It's something that I've always found fascinating. In terms of kind of literature, probably was one of the main things that got me into true crime. I mean, Truman Capote's In Cold Blood, I think that lots of people say that was kind of one of the first books they read that got them fascinated. Reading Happy Like Murderers, which was obviously quite horrendous. But kind of that, I think, was my route in. And then I've just always had a bit of a fascination.
That was Emma Hardy and Grace Harrison talking to Fernando. Issue 1 of Foul Play is out now. Issue 2 is published on the 30th of April. Well, that's all we have time for on this week's programme. Thanks to our producer, Fernando Augusto Pacheco, and our editors, Cassie Galpin and George McDonough. If you have any comments or queries, as always, drop a note to Fernando. You can find him on fp@monocle.com. And don't forget to join us at the same time next week. This is The Stack. I'm Tom Edwards. Thank you for listening.